Live from the WGY studios every Sunday, this is the Paul Potrat Show.
Stop spraying and praying. You're wasting money.
Millennials aren't lazy. It's how you lead them.
When you sell by price, you die by price.
The Paul Potrat Show, helping your business grow and stay relevant.
Covering the latest technology for business, leadership trends, and changing your mindset on marketing.
Now, your hosts, Paul Potratz, the business architect, and Samantha Zewalinski, the millennial entrepreneur.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Sam.
How are you this Sunday?
Wonderful.
So, I was getting dressed this morning, and you know what I was laughing about? Kind of really weird intro, I know.
Yeah.
But I'm in black with a little bit of flowers on.
Yes.
For those of you guys that are
pink, red, blue, light blue.
Listening to us,
green.
We'll paint a picture. I know Paul's usually the fashionista.
Yes.
But I was laughing because my husband has this rule that if I go shopping, I'm not supposed to buy black things because apparently everything I wear is black.
Yeah, you do have a lot of black. There's no doubt about that, but that's okay. Black's a very flattering color.
That's probably why
I
wear it.
Not flattering, slimming color. That's why I like to wear black at times.
But it made me think about something we probably should talk about because people are identifying and people are drawn to different colors. There's a whole psychology behind it.
Right. And you also will identify someone with that color. For example, like Johnny Cash. Since you're talking about black, it makes me think of Johnny Cash in all black.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I think color is very important. You know, what's amazing about color, though, is a lot of people, they don't really think a whole lot about it. I mean, they'll consider it like, what color car do I want? What color am I going to paint the living room?
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really think about the psychology behind color and how color affects someone. And I mean, it doesn't seem like it was that many years ago when we were going through the office. Remember
mm-hmm.
that? When we
yeah.
first walked through the office, it was a typical office environment where everything was white.
Pretty drab, if you ask
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it was a lot of white, a lot of beige, you know, that kind of light khaki
like
color.
Sterile office environment.
Yeah, you know.
Less creative.
Kind of made your stomach hurt, colors. So, yeah, that looked very, very dirty and, you know, well, it was dirty. So, yeah, I agree.
And so when we did that, I think your point, though, was we've decided to, instead of go that office route and just repaint new white walls to clean it up, was think about how we could embrace color in an office environment to stimulate creativity.
Right. And I think that's what's a beautiful thing. And I think that's a perfect topic for us to talk about today is colors, because when it was time to start painting the office, I mean, you know, a lot of walls, a lot of space. And I really started studying colors and how would a color affect one's mood? Because, I mean, we definitely need people to be creative. We need people to be calm. We need
mm-hmm.
people to feel energy and excited, depending on what part of the building they're in.
That's really interesting because I think a lot of people don't give credit, like you mentioned, to color and what it does to you, how it stimulates you or how it does the adverse of that.
Right. So I think you're leading us down the path. Apparently, we're going to talk about color today. Just so everybody knows, we kind of come in and we talk about enough some ideas on some of the shows. I think we over talk it ahead of time what we're going to talk about. But I really like it when we just say, you know what, let's just talk about this. Let's just, I guess, talk from the hip, more or less, about, you know, something that's affected our lives or something that we're passionate about. And I know we're both passionate about colors. All they have to do is watch us on Facebook.
Or look in your closet.
Yeah, or look in the closet. I mean, so, for example, like where you do hard facts every Friday,
mm-hmm.
and I know this is a little off topic, but it isn't in a way. Do you pay attention to what you wear in every video of your hard facts that comes out on Friday?
I do. And then I try and not repeat outfits. But
yeah,
that doesn't
exactly.
always work.
And I do the same thing when I do my Think Tank Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
my weekly video, that I always try to make sure I'm not wearing the same shirt or the same tie or, you know, or the same suit or
mm-hmm.
whatever. I try to mix it and all that. That gets costly, by the way.
I use it as justification for my shopping addiction.
There you go.
If anybody belongs to like Shoppers Anonymous, probably shoot me an email. I probably do need some help.
That and Pinterest. Yep.
So the point behind that
yes.
was what?
Well, the point behind it really is that, you know, that color does matter to you.
So being cognizant of what we're putting forth, what we're doing, how we're picking out colors and utilizing them. And I think a really thing, interesting thing was I was looking at rebranding hard facts, right? So when we do something surrounding our business or creating a product, sometimes the colors that afterthought, because we think, oh, we're naturally drawn to this one color. Hard facts currently, for example, is like very blue and white. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at rebranding it completely. And I was drawn to things like the color gold. But when looking at who our demographic is for it, does that color resonate with that audience? And actually, we ended up going with a really earth tone almost.
You're going to make me laugh.
What?
Well, you're talking about hard facts and who's the audience, and you know the little joke that we have going on about who your audience is on hard facts.
So you're going to make it a much bigger joke by putting it on air, huh?
No. I won't. I'll leave it alone. If you're a senior, no, never mind. Okay. So yeah, no, go ahead. But
everybody loves hard facts.
This is true. They do. So there you go. Definitely. If you want to find hard facts, just go to YouTube and look for Samantha and hard facts, or go to our website. Actually, just go to ppadv.com and search under the resources and find hard facts. A lot of good information. But, you know, when you say that about the color of hard facts, very blue, very white. But once you get into the show, it's very white. And
correct.
The color that sticks in my head the most with hard facts once you're in the show is black and white.
Yeah, because the set is black and white.
Yeah.
But where I was going to go with that is something that was interesting when we were kind of debating whether we do color or not. I always like pull like five different topics for today because I never know where the squirrel's going to take us.
Yes.
Was how different genders relate to different colors. And I actually was thinking this is actually something I can identify with, and I wonder if you feel the same way. So when looking at female preferences, they found that females don't identify and prefer earthy tones, and they prefer primary colors. And it was really interesting because the team presented to me a lot of earthy color logos, and I really was on the fence about them. And I thought about it, and I was like, that makes sense. Why?
Yeah. Well, it's funny you'd say that, too, because, I mean, we're going through a business card redesign right now, and we have a new website coming out for PPADV, for the agency, for Potrats. And a lot of the pictures are black and white, with like a little bit of sepia tone, so kind of that earthy tone. So I said, well, it's time for new business cards. And the background color, the actual paper color, is a medium gray. But then I wanted to go with brown. And it was funny where I asked about brown, and a number of people were like, no, we're not doing brown. It looks old. And I just happened to like that earth tone color. I'm drawn to earth tones and my suit choices, everything. So, yeah, it makes sense. But, you know, talking about colors, though, here's an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
When I say the color yellow, what do you think of? How does it make you feel, the color yellow?
I like yellow, personally. Like, my favorite color of flowers, hint, hint, if my husband's listening, is yellow.
Yes, yellow.
I love yellow. But there's interesting studies about it.
Exactly. But yellow, but tell me how it makes you feel when I say, if you close your eyes right now and I say the color yellow.
Mm-hmm.
What are the feelings that it evokes?
So I think of things that are bright and joyful, because I think of a really bright yellow, like the sun, not like a dingy, dirty yellow,
right.
Like your old gym socks.
I don't have old gym socks, but anyway, so yes.
But we're no, not
I,
your...
I know what you mean. So the color yellow, so, you know, warm, happy, it's those type of colors. So the color yellow would be a good color for a baby's room, right?
No.
Exactly. Wrong. And there's so many times, and there's been studies that's been done when, if you paint a, not when, but if
you, and when you do,
if
don't.
If and when you do, yeah,
go
don't
change
do
it.
Do not do it. But in a baby's room, if the walls are yellow, that baby will cry more than a baby in, say, a blue room. And we think about it, it's a happy color and that type of color. And that was a color that, you know, we have five colors that we use within the, you know, our walls and here in the agency or there at the agency, you know, in our building. And yellow is a pretty, you know, used widely is one of our colors, yellow, gray. Are you thinking about where the yellow is at right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, for example, like where the video editors are at, where all the video production's happening, you'll notice, even though there is one, there's one person that's kind of turned, well, the desk are turned the wrong way from when I originally designed it, because they should be facing gray and, well, two different shades of gray and white. But they're faced towards the yellow right now, so that's why they're probably cranky. because the whole idea was turn the desk the other way so yellow was behind them. So when they get up and they're stretching their legs and they're walking around, they see the yellow. It makes them happy. But if somebody has to stare at yellow all day, they get grouchy.
You know what's interesting?
What's that?
My kitchen is yellow.
Yeah.
I have a very colorful house. It's kind of like our office, actually. I've never thought about that.
Yeah.
Like super squirrel moment, but I probably have every color in our office in our house.
You have the green too, the green that we have?
My office is green. My living room.
When you
room,
say green, is it like a Jiminy Cricket green or is it like an evergreen?
No, it's not dark green. It's not
so
a forest green.
Green.
It's like a bright green.
So it's a grasshopper green.
When color. I was, okay, so like way back when.
Squirrel.
When I was in high school,
yes.
Do you know what crazy color my room was? Potrats orange, so bright
nice.
Orange, plus Jiminy Cricket green. Pretty
nice.
Sure my parents thought I was like psycho, but for some reason they let me do it.
Hmm.
So picture green walls on two walls and two walls bright orange.
Nice.
And I didn't wake up with a headache every day.
That's interesting. You know what color my ceiling was when I was in school?
What color?
It was blue checkerboard.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
I actually was on a ladder for many hours, many days with a sponge.
Oh, it wasn't like wallpaper?
Oh, no. It was my ceiling. And it was...
You could have wallpapered your ceiling.
Well, no, not in the South where I grew up. You could
not. Oh, because of the heat?
No, not because of the heat, because they use that popcorn ceilings. Mm. So I had to line it out and checkerboard it with a sponge. That was like dab, dab, dab.
Guess you really wanted that checkerboard.
I really did. Yeah. But anyway, side note.
But TMI. I think that goes back to how different people identify with different colors, and
yep.
each color stimulates things differently. Like, so we were just mentioning, you know, my room was orange. We have a lot of orange here. Our company logo at Potrats is orange. What influenced you to pick that color? Because you were thinking about the psychology of color and making those decisions centered around a logo. And that's really what our audience needs to think of. So when you guys are looking at releasing a product or creating a logo, really anything that involves your business, you've got to make a conscious decision to think about what's the emotion and the psychology behind what that color is invoking in your customer, your client.
Right. And when I first started the company too, I mean, the website was, the background was all orange. It was a lot of orange
mm-hmm.
and the whole, and I don't really, orange, I like the color, but I'm not in love with the color. And the reason that I went with orange is by studying colors, and the color orange is like a clean, fresh color, but it evokes the feeling of power.
Mm-hmm.
It evokes the feeling of stability. And so that's why I went with orange, is, you know, using that color. And I mean, I do like orange, there's no doubt, but, you know, colors that I like more would be earth tones. I mean, I really like browns and grays. So it's kind of a weird concept, but you know, if you go through our office, you'll see the green, which is like a medium grasshopper green.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see yellow, you'll see orange. There's a lot of orange. And, I'm trying to think, lavender is a color we have. And can you think where there's some lavender at in the
my office?
Your office is lavender. And then there's a lot of offices where the back wall is green.
That was my first office.
That was your first office, exactly. So there you go. What other colors do we have?
Our studio is white.
Yeah, it's white.
We have a black velvet wall.
You had to go there. Black velvet wall. We have the Elvis velvet hanging on the wall. Just kidding. No Elvis velvets. But yeah.
We have a brick wall we shoot on.
Yep.
Some fun stuff. But you know what, too, that a lot of people can think about outside of just the logos is conversion. So
right.
when we're making decisions centered around our website, color plays a really big part. And you mentioned when we're in the process of almost just releasing our brand new Potrats website, which you'll find at ppadv.com. Go ahead and take a look. Let us know what you think when it comes out. But... was how we utilize color there and what colors we utilize that not only reflect our brand, but also evoke emotion and drive conversion. So we did some tests on different client content that we put out centered around conversion and actually found out some really interesting things that maybe break the perception of what colors convert better.
Yeah, and I mean, there's been a number of studies, but yeah, we proved it by doing it and watching what was happening. And it's really easy. So when you pull up to, you're driving your car and you have to pull up to what when it's time to stop?
Either a stop sign or a stoplight.
So a stoplight, red means stop.
Yellow means speed really fast through the
light. Really fast. And green
not
means...
Not condoning that. Yeah. Stop if you're at a yellow light right now.
Exactly. And then green means...
Go.
Go faster. Mm-hmm. And that's what we found out. The color green has a higher conversion factor. So if you use the color green on your call to action button, you can increase the number of leads you're generating off your website.
But one thing I thought was really important too is to identify contrast on your website. Mm-hmm. So if you have a really green website, because let's say you're like an outdoor or nature brand, that green may get lost.
Right.
So it's important to look at your overall scheme of your website because contrast converts.
Yeah. Well, think about that. Like if you go to the Apple website, mm-hmm. it's predominantly a white background, but then their pictures stand out. Mm-hmm. So they're really showcasing the products. And it's my belief that Apple's not really focused on trying to drive a whole lot of conversion on their website. They would rather you be, you know, in their physical brick and mortar location. But the products are really featured on their website. And I've seen many websites like you're talking about, like if you're an outdoor shop and they're trying to make it all earth tone and, mm-hmm. and dark in the background, then your images don't stand out. Your products don't stand out. It really gets lost. And it also has a weird feeling in the sense that you just, I don't know, maybe you can relate to this. And have you ever been to a website where you're clicking through the pages and you feel kind of like claustrophobic, like you're being stifled? That it's kind of like making you tense, that you can maybe feel your heart rate go up.
Like you're just not having a great experience. Exactly. You feel confined by something.
Right. And I mean, and that even happens too. I mean, if you think about different stores that you've been to, like clothing stores or whatever, mm-hmm. the colors can make a huge difference. I know I've been to, well, there's like one store in the mall, not mentioning their name, in Crossgates Mall. Mm-hmm. And it's on the bottom floor and they have discount clothing. And I cannot stand to go in there.
Okay.
The colors that they have across the top of the walls, and this isn't necessarily a color, but it is a color, but the lighting that they have in there makes a huge difference. And I mean, when you talk about lighting, there's various color temperatures, and that's another thing that we did in our offices. One of the first things we did as we had a lighting company come through and change all of the lighting fixtures. There's no more fluorescence where they buzz and have that weird feel. They're all daylight corrected, 5,000 Kelvin.
I wish I had like a bell I could like ding, 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 because I could not relate more. If you have a brick and mortar store, lighting is undervalued.
Oh,
can
yeah.
make everything, make a world of a difference. And it changes that experience 100% because especially if you have like a small store, a lot of the times you're confined by space, how you light that space changes the entire perception of your brick and mortar.
And it will affect somebody. I mean, I always try to pay attention to that and, you know, wear my Apple Watch or whatever. And, you know, it tells you your heart rate and I can physically, my heart rate will go up and it everybody's does. It's not just me. I'm not a weirdo completely, but everybody's heart rate will be affected. Your stress level will be affected by the lighting, by the colors, by the way they put the racks together. I mean, everything. So it's a big consideration that people just don't pay attention to. There's like a restaurant locally and, you know, not too far from our office that we go to. And I like the food, but the decorating and the colors makes it feel like it's dirty, dingy. It makes you think less of the food, less of the place, less of the value of the place, mm-hmm. but it's all psychological because the food's good, but it just gives you that feeling because of the colors on the walls.
Well, colors affect you psychologically, which yeah. perceive and form a perception, and it's what really affects how you interpret something. There's a study that says I think it takes 90 seconds to form a opinion on something. When it comes to fully interpreting like a logo, for example, and I think 65 seconds is also interpreting the color, something along those lines.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, so I know the study you're talking about. It says, 90 seconds for a customer to form an opinion about a product, but 62 to 90% of that interaction is determined by the color of the product. So the majority of the decision is, and I honestly think it's a lot faster than 90
seconds.
So do
I. I was going to say that. I mean, and I don't have the year that study's from, so that's probably predating, you know, the internet age maybe. But even then, if you think about how much, even in that traditional sense, what was it, 62 seconds that color influences?
Well, 62 to 90% of that interaction. So yeah.
So how important that is, even if it is faster, if that large a percent of that decision is based on color, you're not prioritizing that, what kind of opportunity are you losing? 90% of the opportunity, maybe.
Right, exactly. I mean, and you can just think about it. I mean, just think about different products that you see on the shelves. Just recently, for example, I was deciding that I needed, you know, I need some more maple syrup, mm-hmm. since you're not supplying maple syrup to me this year for some reason.
I haven't gotten asked.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll have to ask.
I have
that.
A whole basement full.
I need some maple syrup, Sam. So I had to go buy some.
Okay.
And the containers, there was a lot of the containers that were in this like dingy beige tan color.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of, you know, I was like, eh, I don't know. It was like, you know, homegrown or whatever from Maine and all this stuff. But it was just that container that seemed to turn me off. And then they had one that was a glass container where I could really see the color of the maple mm-hmm. syrup. And that's the one I ended up purchasing.
Hmm.
So you just kind of think about it. I mean, so that's a product. I looked at it.
Yeah.
I probably did stand there for at least 90 seconds because there were so many choices. But I scanned it. I was like, nah.
Well, I've educated you so much. You knew you had to see the color to know what kind of grade maple syrup it was. That's what it was.
That's what it was. Exactly. and how it, you know, moved around. Was it real thick and syrupy or did it flow
have
free?
Too much water in it?
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. But yeah. But I mean, we make that determination on so many people. Someone walks into the room and, you know, what is the color of their outfit?
Well, if you think about it, there's studies that talk about women in the workplace, right? And so mm-hmm. perception and forming opinions is something that, unfortunately, is a fact of life. And there's studies that say how women who wear makeup in the workplace are evaluated compared to those that don't.
Right.
Color.
Color.
It's purely color.
Yeah, it really is.
So.
And then there's a study that says that if an individual is wearing a lot of blue,
mm-hmm.
that people like them more. So you think about that. And, you know, for example, you show up and you're in a pair of blue khakis, you have a blue sweater, you have a blue button down on and a different shade of blue tie, a lot of blue,
mm-hmm.
that people will like you more. So just kind of think about that for a minute, because, I mean, blue is a calming color. But if somebody shows up in like a purple velvet blazer,
mm-hmm.
What kind of opinion would you form about that?
Well, I think when you show up in your purple velvet blazer, they want to feel it.
Yeah, they do. That's true. Every time I wear a velvet blazer, everybody's like, can I touch that?
Well, and I think that's because when you think about what blue represents, it represents tranquility, understanding, and then a really dark blue represents power and knowledge. And that's the psychology behind that color and why it resonates so well with people. And then if you have blue eyes, it makes your blue eyes look fabulous.
There you go. Exactly. And we have blue eyes, just so everybody knows. So there you go.
For those of you that can't see us, we're painting pictures for you today.
Exactly. It's all about painting the picture.
So let's ask this question.
Okay.
What's your favorite color?
Ooh. It depends on what it is. I know that's a hard one.
Okay.
You just want me to give an answer. I know. So,
well, you're difficult. That's about right.
Yeah. So...
Well, the ink in your pen is purple.
It is, but you know what? I just ordered, that's funny you'd point that out, because I just ordered brown ink for my pen.
That is very interesting.
Yeah, so I've decided time to change my ink color to brown. And I've always liked brown business cards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm drawn more to brown shoes than I am black shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm drawn more to brown suits. I like brown suits a lot. So... I think brown is one of my favorite colors for some reason. Brown and orange comes in there. Again, orange I don't love, but I do like it. I think I like brown a lot.
Unless it's a car.
I like red cars.
Is that because it makes you think they're fast?
That's well, a joke. Yeah, maybe a little bit. So
that's interesting, though, because actually studies find that brown is not a popular color among men or women.
That's interesting.
But among Paul Potratz.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about the last car that I just traded in. It was brown.
Mm-hmm.
And the interior was a coffee brown.
Mm-hmm.
And then my car that I drive a lot now, the interiors, I always go for that. I always want that coffee or toffee brown, dark brown interior. So, yeah, I like brown. I think brown's my favorite color.
That's
so
okay.
There we go.
You're allowed that preference.
I like blue, too. But who doesn't like blue? I've never met anybody who goes, oh, I don't like blue.
Yeah. And I guess I've never seen that either.
Yeah. Turquoise, I don't care for the turquoise color, but navy blues, royal blues. So, yeah.
So, if you're building your business, releasing a new product, or just decorating your office, or thinking about, hey, how can I make people more interested in my product or merchandising, they can go over to our website, which is...
Let's go to...
PaulPotratz.com.
Yes, exactly. PaulPotratz.com. That's Potratz with a Z. P-O-T-R-A-T-Z.
So if you head over to PaulPotratz.com or take a look at Paul Potratz's Facebook page, today you'll find the Psychology of Color PDF. So we want to help make sure you're thinking about the science behind color as you're influencing your purchase decisions, as you influence your brand guidelines, and what you're creating and putting out there in the world. So go ahead and head over to PaulPotratz.com for this free PDF. You can also find all of the resources resources from past episodes, which include things like archetypes, mind maps, great resources no matter where you are in your career or your business. So again, paulpotratz.com to find that Psychology of Color PDF. And then if you're looking at changing something, feel free to give us a call. You can reach us at 855-POTRATZ. That's 855-POTRATZ. Did I spell that right? I was saying it so fast.
I think you did.
Sure. 855-POTRATZ. And what you'll be able to do is give us a call, and we look forward to hearing from you. We're going to take a quick break for the news, and we'll be back and headed into the business breakdown.
It's time for the Business Breakdown.
The 7-minute on-air consultation for you.
Call now for your free business consultation with Paul and Samantha. 1-855-POTRATZ.
That's 1-855-768-7289.
Now, let's break it down.
So let's get into the business breakdown. Don't forget there's three ways you can interact with us on the show. You can give us a call at 855-POTRATZ. You can find us on paulpotratz.com or head over to Facebook and search for Paul Potratz, where you can leave us a question. And this week, a lot of our questions come from actual emails that you gave out on the show a few weeks ago. And so one of our emailers asked to remain anonymous, but he had a question and said, I have an employee that continues to have hot and cold moments with her duties and responsibilities. Can you send me bullet points on what you have your performance manager's duties and responsibilities? Trying to really iron out her position, and hopefully this can have an impact on her performance. And so just to add a little context, this is somebody who owns, for example, an advertising agency, because you do a lot of consulting on industries that we exist in the same space as well.
Yeah, and, you know, answering that question, too, to kind of go through it, I think the biggest thing is you need to write out what exactly do you need that person to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't necessarily need to know how we have our performance managers, you know, what exactly do they do, but what do you need that person to do? Because, I mean, there could be different levels of support. I mean, you know, Sam, and you can talk about this more than I can. But, you know, for example, our performance managers, they're not buying media. They do have to travel. They have to go see clients. They're answering the clients 7 days a week. They're not doing copywriting. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of things that they don't do. But it depends on the size of your company and how many hats do they wear. So I think the biggest thing.
What's really interesting with the question, though, is he's asking you, like you just said, what his team member should do. Well, why did you hire that team member? Like, there's obviously something you needed them to take care of. So was that properly communicated and ironed out at either now when you're having those hot and cold moments, or have you maybe adapted it and again, not properly outlined it, or do we just like hire her and she did a bunch of different things and now we need to reshift her focus?
Yeah, so, and that happens a lot of times too.
Yeah.
I mean, that so many times that you'll hire somebody and then you start adding more and more and more to them. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing, but then you start to get frustrated because they're not doing those things. But it's just like you said, it wasn't clearly communicated.
And I think that's half the thing. So you think they should focus on one thing, but they heard greater emphasis from you on another, maybe in a completely different meeting. So where they're spending their effort isn't where you think is most appropriate. But how have you communicated that and how have you followed up on it?
So what's some tips? What are some things that we can do? I'm leading you down the path of, well, you know where to go. So
I think step number one is you really need to say two things to yourself. Did I hire this person for this position they're currently filling? And if you are, go back to that job responsibility, that job posting, the duties you want them to be responsible for. Did you have that properly outlined at inception of that person taking this role? Or if they've grown into this position, maybe you created it. Maybe your business has expanded so much that this is a brand new position. You need to take it back to the foundation and write out the goals and responsibilities for that person. Work with them and set goals and expectations so that way you can properly evaluate performance, not just job duties.
So really start with the job description.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the first thing. What is the job description? Write it out, each individual thing, bullet point it, the job description that is, and then think about it and go through it and see if, you know, does it really make sense? Are you asking them to do too much?
Yes.
And then after you've made that determination, then bring that person in and go line item by line item over that job description and ask them, is this what you've been doing?
Mm-hmm.
Are you adding more, you know, more things to them? And ask them, are you capable of doing this? And then let them just talk to you. Let them tell you. and C, there might be some things in that job description, A, they don't really want to do, so you've got to make the determination. Do you really need them to do that? Mm-hmm. If they don't really want to do it, they're probably not going to do a very good job.
Well, it doesn't have value. So, like, yeah. Do they not want to do it because they don't find value in it? I think a lot of the times... as individuals shaping our team's responsibilities and sometimes shaping the direction our company takes, we think things of little value, maybe larger value items.
Right.
And then our team reacts by not doing them because they're saying, well, this isn't valued. And sometimes the answer to that is it's something that they're doing for us as the manager or the business owner that we're never getting back to them on. So maybe it has value to us, like a report that they send every day, but you're never reciprocating with information, feedback, a thank you even. So they're like, well, I'm going to stop doing this damn report because nobody's looking at it.
Right, exactly. I mean,
it may be vital to you to actually get a pulse on what they're doing.
Yeah, and so many times I know reports that, you know, over the years that I'd have a business owner, you know, a manager, whatever, they would want me to do a report, and I would get frustrated. I'd put all this work into it, and I would never hear back. Or, you know, I would just put it together, and I'd be like, why am I wasting time doing this report when I could just be spending my time effectively and doing what is supposed to be in this report?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so there you go. So I think it's pretty simple. Just make the job description, write it out, go over it with that person, and then keep that job description front and center and keep on, go back to it, you know, go back to it every week in the beginning stages. Hey, how are we doing with this? And then go to it monthly and then mm-hmm. just ultimately set on it that you're going to do a review with that individual quarterly.
So that's really part two of it though, right? So like you need that job description first is what you just said, but yep. then you said, and you kind of led us to our point number two, which is you really need to evaluate it, and you need to evaluate that person, and you need to have a formal process and goals and things that they need to achieve. So that job description is number one to make sure that they're not hot and cold on those responsibilities,
yep.
but then how are you communicating that to them, and how consistently are you communicating that to them? So you should have a quarterly review, but you should be meeting with them at least biweekly to make sure you're setting proper expectations and communicating and assisting them, because that's our goal, is to help them grow, which in turn grows our organization.
Right. And so many times as business owners, we say, hey, we want you to do this, and then we feel like they're going down the path, they're doing it, and then it's out of sight, out of mind. We forget about it, but everybody needs someone checking in, telling them, hey, you're doing a good job, or mm-hmm. here's how you improve. But so many times we'll just kind of set it and forget it, and you can't do that as a business owner or a manager.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, this is obviously, this question wasn't based around somebody doing bad performance. It's just them not knowing maybe what to do. But I think you have to remember constructive criticism. So yeah. in approaching this conversation, it may be a touchy conversation if it's been the center of multiple meetings. So really approaching it from a, hey, this is what we're going to do to repair anything and move forward and really be successful is really important.
Yeah.
Because you need that person on your team.
When there's so many times with constructive criticism that you're more or less an absentee manager, absentee business owner, and you do not give that criticism, and then all of a sudden you start giving it to them, and that's what creates turnover. Mm-hmm. That's what creates the, you know, the anger. It creates a lot of bad things. So
yeah. So if you meet biweekly, you can set that expectation that positive and negatives will be addressed in that meeting, and then it'll just make all of responsibilities crystal clear. So
there you go.
I think that was a great question that we had that's really valuable for whether you're that employee that needs that clarification, because sometimes you are. Sometimes you need to ask your management for that. So maybe you're somebody who's in a little bit of a position that needs some advice. So don't forget, you can call into the Business Breakdown too. It is not just for business owners or managers. And you can either comment, direct message us on Facebook, Paul Potratz, or you can find us at paulpotratz.com, or give us a call now, 855-POTRATZ. But this week, all of our Business Breakdown questions are from Facebook or email, which I think is fabulous because it is a great tool to communicate with your audience. So our next question is from Robert Stern, and he asked, what makes a person comment on a social post?
I think that's a good question. And you think about it, I mean, so many times that you'll see someone that will comment on, you know, let's say Facebook, and no one comments back. And you think about how that makes you feel. That makes you feel like...
I delete those posts sometimes.
That's my silence moment, just to look at you
crickets,
and say,
insert,
you
know, crickets.
Say, what? What do you mean? Why do you delete those posts?
Well, you just were kind of saying, like, how does it make you feel? Well,
and you delete them. How does it make you feel?
Kind of like a loser.
Sam? Yeah. It makes you feel
I'm honest. Let's be honest. Yeah. It doesn't make me feel like the cool kid on the block.
Well, it makes me feel like the way I was in, you know, grade school, that I was the guy that everybody ignored. That they made
nobody
fun
wants
of.
To be at a cocktail party alone.
Yeah. I was the guy that had the funny accent. And they ignored me and made me feel bad. So, yeah, that's the way it makes you feel on social media, too. So you kind of think about it. So you delete it. All right, I'll start doing that. But so here's the question, though. Robert's asking, what makes people mm-hmm. comment on a social media post? Well, we all want to be popular. So you kind of think about it. How do you be popular? What would you say, Sam? If you're commenting on social media, how do you become the popular person in the social sphere?
Mm-hmm. Well, in order to get people to comment, you have to work to build your audience. So you yes. have to work to build friends or page likes, depending on if you're a business or personal profile. So that would be really phase number one, is making sure you're building your audience. Because if there's nobody there, and made the joke at the cocktail party, because we always say social media is like a cocktail party.
Right.
So if you don't invite anybody to the party, nobody's going to comment. So you need to make sure that you're consistently growing that audience, no matter whether it be reaching out to people you once knew or, you know, going to a chamber event and then adding them on Facebook.
So it's going to be hard to make this part of the business breakdown 7 minutes, because I answered it really simple. Are you ready?
Yeah.
So the first thing you've got to do is you need to make a post. Mm-hmm. Your post has to be something that will make people mad.
Evoke emotion.
Exactly. The next part of it is your post has to be something that makes people happy.
Mm-hmm.
Evoke emotion. So you kind of think about it. You want to make people mad? Talk about politics. Talk about religion. Talk about a sports team.
Scrutinize something.
But you've got to decide, how do you want people to perceive you? So you have to be careful. So that's the first thing. Get the emotions going in a hot and mm-hmm. heated way. And I've seen people do that they'll post a picture of like some animal that's being abused.
Mm-hmm.
That will really get in. I'm not saying that you abuse animals in posts, but I'm saying, you know, you're sharing posts. You make people happy. That could be showing a sunset, showing puppies playing, showing children playing, something like that. So that's the two ways to get people to comment. And there's another way, too. So you kind of think about it. How do you get people to comment on your post? And, you know, kind of look behind it. Why do people comment on your post? And it's for them to either get attention.
Mm-hmm.
They want your attention, or they want the attention of the people that follow you. So I think that kind of simplifies it. Does that all make sense? I mean, my analogy on getting people to comment?
Yeah. So invoke emotion and then they'll comment.
Yeah. Or just ask a question.
Ask an opinion. Or
yeah. And not always do, I mean, if you ask a question about something that's not real, I guess, popular or trendy, you might not get a whole lot of comments on it. So I think that kind of simplifies it. But I think it's interesting, because when Robert asked that question of us, he also asked it with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting just to hear what people were saying about that. But it was all pretty much the same. Evoke emotions, or, you know, also get a big following.
Yeah. I mean, and if you don't get a lot of people, you may have a couple of people who are advocates to post, and you can tag them.
Yeah.
And then you end up reaching like their networks and things
like
that.
How do you feel about that, though, when somebody does a post and they tag you on it?
I think it depends what it is. Like, yeah. If you're tagging me on a blog article that you wrote and you're really just trying to whore me out to be your marketing person.
Yeah.
Like, reach my audience.
Right.
Then not so cool. But like, if you're looking for a recommendation because you're planning a vacation and, you know, I live there at one point or went there or, you know, have an opinion about it, like, then that's cool, because it's like you're asking for me to comment.
Yeah.
Compared to just using me as a marketing leg or something like that.
Yeah. Trying to reach my audience, reach
yeah,
my friends.
Or, I mean, and if you're asking a question that's different than like, hey, I'm tagging you because I think this blog post has some inkling to do with your business.
Yeah.
And I see that a lot. So that's one of the reasons that I know that I ended up saying I have to approve anything that goes on my page, because so many people were tagging me in content that really had not anything or nothing, barely anything to do with me.
Like, buy these Ray-Ban sunglasses.
Buy these, the spam too,
yeah,
right?
Spam. Oh my gosh.
So, yeah. And I mean, there's something where you can like work affiliate relationships and help each other, but there's a difference for it pertaining to you or not.
Right. And you know, sometimes what you have to do to get people to comment is, you know, and there's one of the women that we've worked with consulting,
mm-hmm.
and she asked that very question in one of our workshops. And I said, well, you've got to just create more or less a small tribe, a small following. And when you post something, just send them a message and say, would you mind commenting on this?
Yeah.
And then after you get, you know, 4, 5, 6 people to comment on it, other people are like, oh, okay, let me comment on it now, because that's where all the cool kids are at.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different ways to do it. So if you're starting out, don't have a big audience, ask your friends and your neighbors, you know, more or less to do it. So there you go. I think we answered that.
Okay. Good question. And then our next question actually has to do with social media as well. And this is from Terry. Terry is starting a furniture-based business, and she's just starting on everything. So building a website, building a social media presence. And her biggest question is, what and how do I post, and how often is too much on social and Facebook and Instagram? And I think this is a question a lot of people, whether they're building their personal brand or their professional brand, that don't know the mix, right? So we always talk about like a media mix of how much is too much and how little is too little. How do they get lost in the noise, and how do they stand out from the shuffle?
What kind of business does she have again?
It is like an antique business.
So antique furniture?
So I took a look at her Facebook page, and it's actually pretty cool. What she does is she basically restores antique furniture and then sells it.
Okay. Does she, is she right now, is she doing post where she's showing the restoration project and how she's doing it?
Great recommendation. No, there's a lot of what she finished in projects. So I think one thing I had when we were talking to her about consulting, and this was a really great question she had, was like, what do I share?
Yeah, she's got a lot to share. I mean, so I'm just thinking off of the cuff here. You know, if she has antique furniture, I think it would be really great to, every time she gets a new piece of furniture, if there's a story behind that piece of furniture, mm-hmm. she should tell the story. Because, I had a buddy that his dad was an antique, store, more mm-hmm. or less. And his dad was just fascinating. You would go into his antique store, and it seemed like everything in that store had a story behind it. And he would tell you a story of where it came from. This came from Belgium, and it was mm-hmm. in a home like this. So you could start to visualize it.
You could connect with the piece almost.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But he would also tell you the history of the style. When did mm-hmm. the style start? And, when was it popular? And is it back in popularity now? Or is it something that's not very popular, but as styles repeat themselves, and this is going to be, a diamond in the rough so telling those stories. I think storytelling is key. And especially when it comes to antiques, that would be the first thing I would do. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I would do is, when you're showing that piece of furniture, show the condition it's in, because I know there's been times with antiques that I didn't want it refinished. I didn't mm-hmm. want it refurbished. I wanted it where it looked all dingy.
Sometimes it's really pretty because it shows that wear, the patina, story behind yeah. it, the use it had.
Yeah. And so that's, what I would do. I would just start mm-hmm. showing the antiques before you refinish them mm-hmm. and tell everybody, hey, I'm going to be refinishing this next week. If you want it before it's refinished, let me know. And then show the process. I know a lot of people mm-hmm. would like to know what the process is. Chances are she'd probably be thinking, no, I don't want to do that, because then people will do it themselves. Mm-hmm. But let's be honest, most people, we don't have the time. We don't have the space. Yeah. We don't have we just don't have the drive to do it.
Well, and I think if your business, you think you have like a secret to it, you yeah. just don't show that little piece, but you can still tell the whole story. You can give glimpses into that process and what you're doing.
So what part of her business is the restoration of restoring it? Is that a big part of it, or is it just selling the antiques is the bigger part?
That's actually her primary business. So some of it is, like you mentioned, getting those really cool one-of-a-kind antiques that she just, kind of flips. And then a lot of them is refinishing things. So I actually think one thing that she made that was really cool that made me say, hey, where did you get that, was this shelf she built mm-hmm. from two corbels and then some old siding from a house.
Oh, that's cool.
And I asked her about it because I thought it was really ornate, the shelf that itself. And then she had a whole story. You can't find that on her Facebook page.
Oh, wow.
So, people will ask questions, but if you don't have an audience, there's nobody to ask. So you got to build that audience by telling your story.
Yeah, really. Exactly. And if you're telling a story, it's engaging. And I would say, do it in video as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would rather watch a video than read.
Yep.
Generally. But yeah, I would say do it in video, do a lot of pictures. How many times to post a day? I don't think you can really, some things you'll want to pin to the top to make mm-hmm. sure it's there. And that's just a feature when yep. you go to do a post on Facebook, just right click in the top right hand corner and say pin to top on whatever that post is. But if she was posting, let's say 3 to 4 times a day, when she's out and she's finding stuff, or she's doing a video talking about an idea of mm-hmm. something new she's going to build and trying to paint a picture,
getting
telling
opinions
a story,
even.
Getting opinions.
Or like if she's shopping for antiques, like that's kind of cool. I know we talk about that sometimes, like the different shows you can go to, stuff yeah. like that. People don't get to go to them. So show them that behind the scenes. Again, people think that they only want the finished product. A lot of people want to see everything else, including the finished product.
Right, exactly. Yeah, if you're going to an antique store, by all means. or an antique show, I mean,
yeah.
By all means, go Facebook Live or shoot some videos and put the video together, because there's a lot of people that want to see that. And it just
and who knows, you
more
may
content.
Sell something in the process.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because if people can't go, they may say, hey, I want that. And then you can tell them it costs whatever it costs because you got your markup on it.
Yeah. And I mean, anytime you're creating something new, I mean, every product she has, there should be a post for that. And then I would even say, isn't there a tool in Facebook that allows you to sell the things on Facebook?
There is.
I would definitely do that.
Sell on Facebook, on your website.
Yeah.
On Instagram.
Because there's that, what is it, that Facebook now has that, where people are selling garage sales.
Yeah, you can
and
post in the garage sales and different products.
Yeah, so I would.
And that's aside from running an ad. So when you're like thinking about, hey, how can I do this a little bit more grassroots as you start getting going, that doesn't include ad dollars.
Yeah, exactly. That's free. Mm-hmm. So free. I believe
it's free.
It is free because I sold a motorcycle on it.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So it works.
It does work. Well, I know there's a number of people in the office. I don't know about a number.
I went to an estate sale from it the other day on lunch.
So, there you go.
Everything was way overpriced.
Yeah, it usually is. So,
But
yeah, I would use that. I think that there's a lot of opportunity. I think that's engaging. I think that's fun. I would say talk about the stains. Talk about the lacquers. What's the difference between a polyurethane and a lacquer? And I mean, there's so many things that could be talked about that people are going to YouTube and searching for.
That's a good point.
So why not just do it on Facebook and build your audience that way and build your awareness? I'd be all about it. So there you go.
Well, that was a great question that we got. And we got that question via direct messenger. And then we took that conversation off the air and had that with Terry one-on-one. So that's another thing. Don't forget, if you don't want to be on the radio, you can still ask us our question. We can feature you in an upcoming episode of The Business Breakdown.
Samantha, I thought those were really good questions today. And you know what I like about the Facebook questions or the instant messenger questions is it just lets us roll and talk about it. It really does. So we can go all different directions on that. I just wonder if we always answer everything they want when we do that. But if not, they can always call in too. Mm-hmm. So we talked about colors, and I'm pretty passionate about that. I mean, you know, all you have to do is look at my yellow pants, my red pants, my green pants, you know, whatever it is.
All the colors.
And it made me think years ago, I put it out there, you know, I talked about it on social media, I talked about it in Think Tank Tuesday, and I talked about websites because people started asking, what is the best color for a website, meaning the background color? Mm-hmm. And we did a study, and we found out that the color that you do not want for a website because it had the lowest amount of conversion, guess what that color was that you do not want to have on your website, but so many people like that color when it comes to a website?
White.
Black. Black was the lowest converting website. Again, this was years ago.
I didn't
want
to have the right answer, by the way.
Okay, good. I know you knew that because you were part of it. But yeah, a website that's black has the lowest conversion. But a lot of times if it's a guy and it's, you know, he's got a business, he wants to make his website black. And I mean, I'm not saying that black would not work. It just depends what type of business you are.
I think it really depends on what type of business you are. But in most instances,
right,
your business doesn't correlate with a black website. Because, I mean, think about how you're displaying products, the background for those products. Then you have a really big contrast. And it's not a good contrast because it's a stark contrast.
Yeah, it really is. And then, you know, something important with colors, too, when you're talking about colors online versus colors in your office environment in your home or your a newborn baby's bedroom or whatever it is. But you got to think about the computer and how is that monitor going to render those colors. Well, that color that you picked that's lavender that you think is going to be a wonderful color, or that color yellow.
Maybe it's like, really pinky instead of lavender, which evokes a completely different emotion.
And it could be like what you said, those, if it's yellow, it could look like those dirty gym socks. And if you're trying to sell food product or something like that, the two just don't go together very well. So I think that's important to really think a lot about color. But let's talk a little more about color. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. It's really easy. We've done a number of videos that talk about color. So I want to give two different websites for people to go to. You ready?
Okay.
The first one, of course, paulpotratz.com. And then the other one is our agency website, which is potratzny.com.
Or ppadv.com. You've heard us say that before. So yeah, we do have the two URLs.
So there you go. So ppadv.com.
And on both of those websites, you'll be able to find the download of the week, which is our Psychology of Color PDF.
You know, I want to do a show coming up, and I want to talk about smells.
Let us know what you guys think about that. Comment on Paul Potratz's Facebook page.
Yeah, I want to talk about smell, because I know you know how I am about smell in the office. And I know people were thinking, what's he talking about? Is he talking about people passing gas or what here? But I mean,
You ordered, what did you order? A lot of people, can't think of the word, scent humidifiers. Is that what they are?
Boy, I'm having a block right there. What are they called?
Well, they emit scents throughout the office.
Yeah, it's essential oil, kind of not an ionizer, but an essential oil mister.
Okay.
So, yeah, I ordered a bunch of those. I have those throughout the office. And it's kind of funny that, you know, clients will visit and they're like, oh, it smells like, what did they say the other day? It smells like I can't think of what they said.
Well, you know what I think is interesting, though, too, that if we talk about that in an upcoming episode, is how it's individual.
Yeah.
Because there's a team upstairs, and I went in their office and they had a team member off, and they were like so happy because his personal preference was like lemon and they liked cinnamon. And they were like, yes, we don't have to smell lemon today, because they compromised.
Yeah. And when you kind of think about it, though, I mean, because one of my favorite ones is lavender. I like to mix lavender and rosemary.
So how about we do that next week?
Yes, we will do that next week.
So we'll talk about smells, scent marketing, and then also send us your questions for the business breakdown. But that's it for this week's episode of the Paul Potratt Show. Don't forget, you can now listen to every episode on demand over at paulpotratt.com. If you visit paulpotratt.com, click on the radio shop. You can listen to the show and see all of the resources we talked about. That's this week for the Paul Potratt Show. See you next Sunday.
You've been listening to The Paul Potratt Show. Paul is the architect behind Potratt's Advertising, an international consulting and advertising agency based in Schenectady, New York.
For more info or to learn how to work with Paul and the Potratt's team to grow your business and improve your processes, visit paulpotratz.com. That's Paul, POTRATZ.com.
And join Paul and Samantha next Sunday morning at 11, right here on WGY.